We are on the Gemara and Daf Ches Amud Aleph. Did you speak to Rav Kornfeld, Larry?
I spoke to him briefly, and I for like 1 second he was in and out, and I told him that I was in your share. He smiled, was happy, but it wasn't really. There was so many. It was a madhouse, so I really didn't get a chance to. And I don't know him very well, but I thanked him for introducing me to you because.
Okay, I thank him as well for it. Okay, says the Gemara. We're on the first word. The first word on the line is Hayoinik. The Pasuk says, Ki ato sovoi. V'ksiv ki ato sovi. What's the difference between the translation of the word sovoi and sovi? Sovoi means to come, and Savi means to bring. So what's going on over here? Who's coming? Who's bringing? What's the story over here? So look at Rashi. Rashi says, Ki ato sovo yeso'om mashma gam ato ke'echod mehem. Mashma that you, Moshe Rabbeinu, will also be with one of them. Like one of them, you also will come into, I assume it means Eretz Yisrael. Next, Rashi, ki ato sovi, mashma, srora noyeg alehen. Mashma, that you will bring them, but not necessarily that you yourself will come with. So how do we reconcile? It says the Gemara, Omar loy, Moshe li Yeshua, ato v'hazakenim shebedoir imohem. We'll see, we'll read, then we'll see Rashi. Omle HaKadosh Baruch Hu toil makel v'hach akod kodom. Dovar acher, echod ledoir, v'ein shnei dvarim ledoir. So it's all rather cryptic. Let's have a look at Rashi. Says Rashi, Moshe Omar Loi, Zakenim Shebedoir Va'ato Imehem, which means Al Pihem Asei Maisa Veloisis Storer Alehem Dahukro de Kiato Sova Moshe Omroi Kediksiv Bela Oretz Ashenishba Hashem Ubamikro de Kiato Sovi Ksivela Oretz Ashenishbati Lavoisechem Alma da Kodesh Boruchu Ba'atzmoi Omroi. Okay, Rabbi Yosef is going to help us out over here. How do Art Scroll explain what's going on over here? The reconciliation of the two psukim.
The first one is that Moshe instructed Joshua to lead the people in partnership with the Zikanim.
Yep.
Omar LeHaKadosh Baruch Hu. In the second one, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is talking to Yehoshua and tell him to tell Makel to take a stick, bang them on the head. In other words, that should be, I think the Gemara explains, I think, Dabor Echod Lador, the Ein Shnei Daborim Lador. He's to be the one leader.
But it's, so how's it reconciling the Psukim though? On the one place is Mashma that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe that, or Yeshua, that you will lead Klal Yisrael together with the Zakenim. And the other pasuk says, no, that you will have to take a stick and beat them on the head, meaning you will lead Klal Yisrael themselves. So do they explain?
Yes, so in the first case, Moshe is speaking to Yeshua. In the second case, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu who is speaking to Yeshua. And you're getting two different views.
You know, I'm saying that's what's troubling over here. So they don't attempt to reconcile this stira. When Moshe Rabbeinu issues the instruction to Yeshua, he says, you will lead Klal Yisrael together with the Zakenim.
Yes, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a different approach.
Right, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to Yeshua, he says, you will be the one leading Klal Yisrael. That's what it means. Daver Echad, one spokesman, but not two. Okay.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's Agadata. We want to move forward. We don't want to get stuck on it. Says the Gemara, Tana. Zimun Bishloisha. Now we're completely moving on to a new topic. We'll see what the connection is. Zimun Bishloisha. My Zimun. Why are we discussing the Zimun at all, Bichlal? We're really going back all the way to where we began, which is discussing the Dine Momonus Bishleisha. But here's another principle that needs three, and that is a Zimun. Says the Gemara, what does it mean, my Zimun? Ilema Birkas Zimun. If you're telling me it's the Brocha of Zimun, Vahotanya, we've learned in a Braisa, Zimun, Ubirkas Zimun Bishleisha. So we already know this halacha. What are you teaching me? V'chid Teima, and if you're going to tell me that Perushi komafarish, that we're just coming to not be machadish anything, just explain that my zimun, it's the birkas hazimun. That can't be because Vatani, we've learned that in a braisa also. Zimun bishloisha, birkas zimun bishloisha. So we know all these halachas, what is being taught. Elam, my zimun, azmuni ladin. So now we know why it's connected. We are not suddenly discussing Hilcha Zimun over here. Why on earth we would be discussing the Halachas of Zimun, Rabbi Yisai Nevorech, in the middle of Masech the Sanhedrin? The answer is that the word Zimun could be understood differently, Azmune Ledin. What does it mean, Azmune Ledin? So look at Rashi, it means a summons to Bezdin. Look at Rashi. Azmune Ledin, says Rashi. Bezdin, Shesholchin shlucham lebal din. The Bez Din send a group of people to the Baal Din. Shetzoyakim olav lovoy velovoy. And they have to force him, scream at him, tell him to come. Velodun lifnehem. Sorry, chaz shliach lazminoi b'shem shloshton. The shliach, who is sent to summons this fellow to Bezdin, has to come as an appointee of all three Dayonim.
And that's if he doesn't come, they can put him in a Chayram, right?
Right. B'shem Shloshtam. So therefore, all three Dayonim have to formally appoint this fellow as a Shliach to summons Pliny to dinner. And that's what it means, Zimun. Zimun doesn't mean as in Birkas Hazimun, but rather from the word Hazmana, which is like an invitation or a summons. Says the Gemara, to back this up, just like Yehoda Omar Rava, like Rava said, Hani Bei Tlosa Dayoni. These three Dayonim, the Yosvi, the Ozil, Shlicha, the Bei Dina. Also, just give me 2 seconds, please. Sorry. Yep, sorry, back with you. Okay, I have you back. Says the Gemara, Ki ha doma Rava, just as Rava says, Hani bei tlosa dayoni. When three judges are sitting, the Yosvi, whenever you have a tof in the middle of an Aramaic word, you can switch it to a shin as if it says the Yosvi. So three Dayanim who are sitting, the Ozil Shlicha de Beidina. And the Shliach of the Bezdin goes, the Omar, and he says, Mi Puma, Puma is the mouth. He says in the mouth, in the name of the Chad of just one of them, Loi Omar Klum, he has said nothing. So this was Rava's statement, that when you have three Dayonim sitting, and they summons somebody to come to the Bezdin, but it's only in the name of one of them, Loi Omar Klum, Ad de Omar Mishmei de Kulhu, until such point that they have said it in the name of all three. However, Hani Mili Beloi Yoima de Dina. This is only true on a regular day. Not on a day that the Beis Din convene. However, avol b'yoyme d'dina less lamba. What does it mean, yoyme d'dina? There were two days a week where the Beis Din used to convene. Which were those 2 days? Rashi says sheni v'chamishi. If any of you have ever learned Ksubas, the opening Mishnah in Ksubas is that a wedding should really be on Wednesday, just in case there are any problems, so that the next day you can report it to Beis Din, which is a Thursday. So if on a Monday or a Thursday, which was an official Beis Din day, they may well have convened on a different day, but that's not a matter of policy. As a matter of policy, they always convened on Monday, on Thursday, and then you actually don't need all three to summon somebody to Beis Din. But if it's a non Beis Din day, then you would. Okay, we went a little bit off subject, but Rabbeisai, we're going all the way back now to our Mishnah.
Rabbi, when the time is appropriate, I have an, not for now, I have an unbelievable vort on the pasuk Kashayisa also omenes ayonik from a refined waxman. Will you let me know if and when you about it's it'll blow you away. But
let's hear it.
So it says Kashayisa omenes ayonik. He was trying to explain how Amuna works. That if the baby doesn't suckle and ask for the milk from the mother, it doesn't come. It's not like it's a punishment. It's just the system. And when he finally suckles, what he gets is exactly the right vitamins. That's the benefit of using the mother's milk versus formula. He gets exactly what he's needed. So too with Amuna. That's why it's called Yisa Ome Nisayonik. If you suckle to Hashem and ask and say, I need, he will send you the refuah exactly through the Amuna of exactly what you need. Was it? I thought
it is amazing. In fact, I've also heard that from a refined waxman himself. Yeah, it's amazing. Okay, Rabbi Yisai, if any of you have a Sanhedrin in front of you, go back to the opening Mishnah of Beis Amud Aleph. If you remember when we learned the Mishnah, we actually did not learn the whole Mishnah because we said, when are we going to refer back to it constantly? So how did the Mishnah begin? Dinei Mamonos b'shloisha, Gzeilos v'chavolos b'shloisha, which we have dealt with, Nezek v'chatzi Nezek. This is the next line where we're up to now. Tashlumei kefel. V'tashlumei arbo'o v'chamisho b'shloisha. So let's remind ourselves, when do you pay kefel, which means double? When do you pay arbo'o, when do you pay chamisho? Kefel is when somebody is accused of stealing, he denies, and it turns out, he takes a shvur to deny it, and it turns out that he has the stolen property in his rishus. So not only does he have to return it, obviously, but he's also got to pay double. Number one, what's dalad vehei, 4 and 5? As we know, that's a special halacha of either a sheep or a cow, that if you slaughter it and sell it, then you've got to pay 4 or 5. Now, what is the common denominator between kefel, arbo'o, and chamisho? That obviously, they are all what we call knosos, it's a fine, it's a penalty. By definition, wherever you pay more than the initial amount that you stole, it must by definition be a knas. Were it not to be knas, in other words, knas versus momoin, if it's a standard momoin punishment, then you'd merely pay back what we call the keren, which is the capital. If you're paying more than the capital, it must be defined as a knas. So look at the Gemara now, back in Daf Ches Amud Aleph. Says the Gemara, Tashlumei kefel. Sholach lei, we're on the last narrow line. Sholach lei Rav Nachman bar Rav Chista le Rav Nachman bar Yaakov. So Rav Nachman bar Chista sends a message to Rav Nachman bar Yaakov, and he says, Yilamdeinu Rabbeinu, please teach us the following halacha. What was his shaila? Dine knosois bekamo? Question mark. Please teach us Whenever you have a kenas, as we said before, which means you're paying more than the initial capital, would a bezdin need to adjudicate on a halacha like that? How many dayanim need to be on the bezdin? That was the question. Now, why is that a very peculiar question? Because it's a mafurish mishnah. She just told us that kefel or dalet vehei needs three dayanim. So it's not clear what was the question. Says the Gemara, my komi boyale. What exactly was he asking? Ho'anantanan b'shloisho. We've learned in the Mishnah, b'shloisho, question mark. So what's the question? What do you mean? How many dayonim do you need? Exactly what it says in the Mishnah, three. What's the shayla b'chlo? There's the Gemara, you're right. That was not the question. The question was, elo, rather, yochid mumcha, komi boyalei. We've had in the past in this parak that on occasion, not always, instead of having three regular dayanim, you could have a yochid who's a mumche, is an expert dayan. So the shaila is, can you have a knas being adjudicated instead of by three, rather than by one mumche? Says the Gemara, elo yochid mumche komi boyalei de'ein Dine knosos oiloi. Can cases of a knas be judged by a yochid mumcha? That was really his shaila. He knew very well that in an ordinary case, of course you can have, and you need to have, three dayonim. But can you have a yochid mumcha? Now, why yes, why not? So have a look at the Gemara explains. Omar lei. So we answered back, Tani suho. That yes, we have learned. We have learned. Shloish tashlume kefel, v'tashlume arba'o v'chamisho b'shloisho. Quote unquote. That was a line from our Mishnah where it says the kefel or dalad v'hei is in the presence of three dayonim. My shloisho. What does it mean when you have to have three? Three what? So we would all say three straightforward hedyotos, meaning average dayanim. Says the Gemara, Ilema, if you're going to tell me that the three who are mentioned in the Mishnah is shloisho hedyotos, meaning three ordinary dayanim, not necessarily a mumcha, that can't be. Ha omar avua da avucho. Surely your father's father said, Mishmei Derav, Afilu Asoro Vehein Hedyoitais, Psulais Ledine Knossois. Rav said that when you're judging the halachas of Knossois, even if you have, never mind three, even if you have 10 Dayonim, but as long as they are hedyotos, that will not do. There will be posel. There is a special halacha for reasons that we have not had explained to us, that when you're judging knosos, hedyotos will not suffice. Never mind not one, never mind not three, even if you have 10. So therefore, when in the Mishnah it says that knosos are with three dayonim, what dayonim must it mean? It can't mean hedyotos, because if it's a geotis, and even 10 will be psuim, says the Gemara, elo mumchim. Rather, you always have to have mumchim, and therefore, v'koma shleisha. And it says in the Mishnah, you have to have three. So therefore, this is an exception to the rule. The normal rule is that whenever you require three dayonim, three hedyotis will suffice, alternatively, one mumchim. But when you're judging knosos, we have not had it explained yet, but when you're judging knosos, no number of hedyotos will suffice. You've always got to have mumchin. How many mumchin? You've got to have three. And therefore, his initial question, how many do you have to have? Will one mumcha suffice? And the answer is absolutely not. No, it will not suffice. Now, I'm just curious, Rabbi Yosef, Do they explain perhaps in a footnote why knossos will not be kosher if you have hedyotos? Why do you all of a sudden need mumchin? Do they explain that?
Note 21. Although three expert judges are required to judge such cases under biblical law, Rav Nachman bar Rav Chista was inquiring whether the rabbis decree that a single expert judge is sufficient. No, it doesn't explain, just as they decreed with regard to ordinary monetary cases. But there's no extra explanation.
Okay.
Of the answer.
Right. So we move on. If you look back into the Mishnah on the Beis Amud Aleph, all the way back again, we're going to keep on referring back to the Mishnah.
You know what, Rebbe? Just as a stab as to why the Knossos, maybe because let's say they made a mistake. So what happens now? They return the guy's money to him. It's a transaction of money. So you got to make sure that there's not a mistake. It would become very complicated. Because if he has a knot, well, what's going to happen? They're going to have to return the money back to him because they realize that the hedyot made a mistake.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, this needs to be looked at. Fine. Have a look now back into the Mishnah. The next line of the Mishnah says, "Ha'oinas v'hamafata v'hamoitzi shemra b'shloisho divrei Rabbi Meir." Now, it's very important. Now, it's very important that we understand what the three cases are. What is the difference between oinas, mefata, and moitzi shemra? Oinas is in a case of rape, which means it was forced. Mefata means seduce. It means initially it was forced, but she eventually acquiesced. So it was not forced at the end. Moitzi Shemra is a different halacha completely. Moitzi Shemra is when somebody gets married to a woman who he was told was a virgin, she was a basula, and it turns out that she wasn't. At least that's what he claims. He claims to the father of the girl, "You gave me your daughter's hand in marriage, and I was under the understanding that she was a basula, and it turns out that she was not." Now, if it's called Moitzi Shemra, which means you're issuing a bad name, then clearly the indication is, and that's what the Torah is talking about, that his allegations are untrue. His allegations are untrue. So he gets married, and after the first night, he comes to the father of the girl, and he says the famous words that we find in Ksubas, "Pesach posuach motzosi." Pesach posuach motzosi, literally translated, "I found the door open," which is, of course, a reference, a moshel, that she was not a basula, and rather the mokim there was open. As we've seen, we've discussed many times in different forums, the beauty of Lashon HaKodesh is there are no words for anything vulgar. It's all in a moshel. When we talk about a bathroom or a toilet, there is no word for a toilet in Lashon HaKodesh. What's it called? A Beis HaKiseh. Beis HaKiseh means a house with a chair. When somebody has to relieve themselves, it's called Mei Raglayim, water of the legs. Tzoya is excrement. Tzoya just means exiting. It's something that exits the goof, etc., etc., etc. So too, when we talk about Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, rather than going into all the unnecessary details, that is a reference, Pesach Pasuach, "I found the opening was open," which means that she was not a basula, and he therefore claims that she must have committed znus after or sometime prior to the marriage. It turns out his allegations were totally unfounded, and he's merely talking Lashon Hara, Moitzi Shemra, about his newly wed. And the Gemara, the Torah, describes that there's a whole din Torah, and you've got to pay money to the father of the girl. So knas, you've got to pay 50 shekel for slandering his daughter. Al kol poniv oifen. So the Mishnah has told us that for oinas and mafata and moitzi shemra, you need three. And the Chachamim say that for moitzi shemra, you actually need 23. So let's see more details. That was the Mishnah. Now let's see the Gemara. It says the Gemara on the fifth last line. V'chachomim oimrim moitzi shemra be'esrim v'shloishom. When it comes to moitzi shemra, you need 23. And what was their reason? Because it might lead to dinei nefoshes. What does dinei nefoshes mean? In the event that his allegations turn out to be true, so therefore she's committed znus. Now here we have to point out something very important, and this is sometimes difficult for us to understand because nowadays it doesn't apply. We know that there exists a concept of erusin and nisuin. Nisuin is marriage. Erusin is very badly translated sometimes as engagement. Why is that a very bad translation? Because the way that we use the word engagement nowadays is not erusin. Nowadays, when you go to an engagement party, what binds the chosan and kala halachically? The answer is zero, nothing. There is no halachic relationship between the chosan and kala. Either one is perfectly permitted to pull out and decide, no, they want to marry somebody else. Meaning they don't need a get, they're not married, etc., etc. There are no halachics whatsoever. So therefore, that's not what erusin is. Erusin, those who are with you, those who are with us for when we learn kiddushin, or isha mukudeshes bekesef b'shtar b'bia. Once she becomes, let's not call it engaged, betrothed, she is his wife. Not as we call an engaged couple to be wed, but rather she is his wife. And if she therefore commits znus now with another man, she's chayev misa, because she's considered to be married. You'll ask, therefore, so what's the difference between erusin and nisuin? If after the erusin already she was considered to be betrothed and essentially married to him, what happened in addition when they did the nisuin? So there's various halachas that the nisuin, which is really more the chuppah and the yichud, that adds extra halachas of marriage. For example, if she would die, he would now inherit her. There's halachas with regard to koyanim, at which stage can she eat truma, etc., etc., etc. So it's just an addition of some further halachas. But essentially, she's considered a married woman. And therefore, if somebody gets married and then makes allegations and he claims that your daughter was not a basula, so what may that mean? It might mean that she's committed znus in that period leading up to the wedding, meaning when she was in the stage of erusin, in which case she's chayav misa. Not as we would have it today. If somebody today would get married and find that his wife is not a basula, then we can't possibly consider her as having done zanus because she was never married. Whereas in the times of Chazal and the Torah, prior to the nisuin, she went through the stage of erusin. Once she became an arusa, she is forbidden to every man because she is, for all intents and purposes, married to the first one. And therefore, that's what it means in the Mishnah, that this is possibly dinei nefoshes. If the allegations are unfounded, then the husband has to pay a financial penalty to the father of the girl for having slandered his daughter. But if the allegations are founded and proven, then it may well be that she turns out to have done znus and she's chayav misa, dinei nefoshes. In which case, says Rabbi Yossi, well, then you need 23 dayonim. It's not enough to have three.
If is there bia after erusin?
No.
So this would have to be edus, because how else?
So sorry, mistake. They don't live together, But the way that she becomes mukudeshes, which is the same as erusin, yeah, can be with bia. That's what the Mishnah says. Kesef shtar or bia, but they don't yet live together.
Right. That's, so my point is,
minhag, wasn't the minhag that in Yehuda they did live together after erus?
100%.
But therefore, then if he has a tainus basulin during erusin, it has to be through an edus and not through his own personal experience because he's not with her.
Or there was no bia. You don't have to mekadosh on your bia. It could be with kesef or b'shtar.
No, but how would he know then that there's a problem? How would he have a claim if he didn't, you know, he sleeps with her and then he has a claim. But if he doesn't sleep with her during erusin, how would he have a claim during erusin?
No, the claim is when it comes to nisuin.
So then how would he say this happened during erusin?
How do we know when it happened?
Yeah, in other words, he sleeps with her at nisuin and he says this happened during erusin, so she's chayav misa. How does he know that?
That's what we said. We have to be mavara, the allegations.
How would he know that? How would he even know that?
Bari v'shema. We're talking right. Bari v'shema here.
It's all sugya and ksubas, which...
Yeah, that's what we're learning now. That's what we're learning now, Rabbi Berenstein's
Chabur. Ah, okay, so these are the sugyas there. Fine. Okay, either we'll have to hold it over here. This is all by way of introduction, but it does possibly lead us to din in afoshes. That's the principle of the Gemara. Fine, okay, we'll have to hold it over here. Parsha Shir, for those of you who are interested, this evening, Be'ezus Hashem, at 7:20, all being well.
Okay.
Okay, see you, everybody. Okay.